Welcome to the podcast called The Battle for African Agriculture, where we explore the intersections of food, power, and sovereignty in Africa and beyond. I'm your host, Million Belay. In this episode, we'll explore one of the most contested battlegrounds in African food systems, seed policy, and more specifically, the expanding influence of plant variety protection, which are called PVP laws, aligned with UPOV 1991. These laws, often promoted in the name of innovation and development, have profound implications for farmers' rights, seed diversity, and who controls the future of food on the continent. To unpack this complex and politically charged topic, we are joined by François Mellenberg, one of the leading experts on seed laws and intellectual property in agriculture. François is a senior advisor and founding member of APRIBES, Association for Plant Breeding for the Benefit of Society, a network that brings critical scrutiny to international seed policy and advocates for rights and biodiversity. François has worked for decades on issues at the intersection of trade, law, and agriculture. He has advised governments, published widely on the impacts of UPOV, and helped civil society push back against the legal frameworks and threaten the foundation of farmers' managed seed systems. We are thrilled to have him with us today to dig into the evidence, the power dynamics, and the possibilities for resistance and transformation. Welcome, François.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
François, can you start introducing yourself and your work at APRIBES? What motivated your engagement with seed laws and farmers' rights?
Yeah, so my name is François Mellenberg, and it's true, since 25 years I'm working on the subject on intellectual property rights, farmers' rights, agrobiodiversity. I was heavily involved in the negotiations for the Nagoya Protocol, for the treaty, for the implementation of the FAO Plant Treaty, and so on. And maybe in the, around 2008, together with other NGOs working on the aspect of intellectual property rights, we have seen we are in a way present and we are part of the negotiations everywhere, in CBD, at FAO, at the World Intellectual Property Organization. And we have seen that there is another organization called UPOV, where never, ever, any farmer organization or any NGO has been part of the negotiations. Since in the first 50 years of UPOV, only the seed industry has been an observer. And we thought, hey, we like to be there. We like to listen. We like to contribute. Because all these negotiations need to be balanced.
François, what you are saying is, you've been participating in CBDs and other international negotiations. But while you are there, there is this thing called UPOV, where only seed breeders are participating. And you suddenly said that you want to participate also to observe what's happening.
Correct. And so we wrote to them and we said, hey, we like to be observer, at least.
Yeah.
And the first reaction was, no, it's not possible. And we said, why? Because at this time, even the rules for observers have not been published. Then they have been published, and we have seen that these rules are different to any other international organization. You see, in a way, you have to prove by your statutes of the organization that you have this expertise on matters related to UPOV. And none of this organization interested to be observer has had this kind of statutes. Therefore, we funded APRIBES. APRIBES, the Association for Plant Breeding for the Benefit of Society, is a network of NGOs working on the subject of intellectual property rights, plants, farmers' rights, and biodiversity. And finally, after a heavy battle, I have to say, after 2 years of negotiations, we have been allowed to become an observer. And since then, in the last 10 years or in the last 15 years, I have been the only civil society in these discussions. On the other side, there have been often 10, 20, or even 30 representatives from the seed industry. So it's still not a balanced way. But that's how we came into it.
Thank you very much. For our audience, what exactly are plant variety protection? And how does UPOV 1921 fit into this? Before that, you said you are the only one. Is it because you are the only one allowed, or you are the only one who have time and you can spend energy into this?
So there have been other applications to become an observer, for example, by the Quakers, which an organization based in Geneva. They were very active on these intellectual property rights, but it has been denied. They have not been allowed to become an observer. On the other hand, together with us, the European coordination of Via Campesina, finally, after this two-year battle, received an observer status, but so far they have very limited resources to always go to all these meetings and negotiation rounds.
Okay, so but you always go. Okay, okay.
Your question was, what is plant variety protection?
And so where does UPOV fail into that? Yeah.
Yes, and plant variety protection, so first of all, is an intellectual property right. And as an intellectual property right, it gives you a monopole on the variety you have bred. So if I'm a breeder and I apply for a plant variety protection right, I receive the monopole to be the only one to be allowed to sell this variety. Now, how UPOV comes into it, there have been very few European countries which have introduced plant variety protection, maybe in the 50s. But then in the 60s, there was a meeting really initiated by the seed industry of few European governments, and they try in a way to harmonize the system of plant variety protection. And this is the way UPOV, in a way, saw the light. But it's important to see, already at the beginning, in the 61, there has been a handful of European countries negotiating. And also later in the history of UPOV, also when the latest UPOV Act of 91 has been negotiated, only 20 countries, 19 of them from industrialized countries, have been on the negotiating table. So UPOV is a kind of convention which tries to harmonize plant variety protection, but in mind the European agricultural system and the interest of the plant breeders.
So that's something coming from Europe to other continents then.
You see, at the beginning, this was not the idea. At the beginning, it was really these European countries and later Northern America, Japan, who have this intention to harmonize the plant variety protection laws. And I think the biggest change came when the WTO TRIPS agreement on intellectual property rights have been adopted. And in this TRIPS agreement, every country has the obligation to protect plant varieties, either by patents or by another system. And so a lot of countries didn't have any interest to protect plant varieties by patents, so they had to look for another solution as a WTO member to protect plant varieties, to give them some intellectual property on this. And with this change, there has been a growing interest to UPOV. And with this change, also the membership of UPOV expanded extremely.
Okay, that's
so there was
very
this,
much
this push by the TRIPS agreement, who made a big change in the membership.
But if I'm not wrong, the majority of African countries are not a member of WTO.
Oh, I think the majority of Africa are member of WTO. There are very few which are not, Ethiopia, for example. But important to see is that a lot of African countries are least developed countries. And in the TRIPS agreement, there is a clause.
What is TRIPS agreement in relation to
the
WTO?
Trade-related intellectual property rights agreement, which is a part of the World Trade Organization. So when you become a member of the WTO, of the World Trade Organization, you automatically also are bound by the so-called TRIPS agreement, which gives some minimal standards on patents, but also, what I said, on plant variety protection. And on this, it's important to see that for least developed countries, there is a clause in this TRIPS agreement, which tells you there is no, you are not bound by the TRIPS agreement now for the next 10 years, but finally, maybe even longer, it could even be expanded. So these countries do not have to implement these requirements until today, and also not in the near future. So they have still a freedom to have a kind of plant variety protection law, or to have no plant variety protection law at all.
So there is nothing which forces countries to be part of this now, as it exists.
So, as long as you are a least developed country, you are not forced by the TRIPS agreement. If you are a WTO member and not a least developed country, you have the obligation to have a kind of plant variety protection. But
not necessarily UPOV 91 then.
That UPOV is not mentioned at all. You are totally free. You are totally free to draft the PVP law, which is really in line with your needs, with your agricultural system, and so on. And this has been used by countries like Zambia, Zimbabwe, Ethiopia, India, Malaysia, Thailand, Indonesia, and many, many others who have developed a law for their own system, for their needs, which is not in line with UPOV, and which better have a better balance between farmers' rights and breeders' rights.
Interesting. Question is, what is the relationship of UPOV 91 with its earlier version of the UPOV 1978 and also the African Model Law?
Yeah, you see, at the beginning of UPOV, I would say this has been seen as an intellectual property right to protect one breeder against another one. So, for example, when you would have been, you are a breeder and you developed a new variety of potato, UPOV 78 gave you the monopole so that I, as another breeder, as another seed company, I will not be allowed to sell your variety on the commercial market. This, in a way, is UPOV 78. To protect one breeder against another one. And for me, this makes sense because there is investment to develop a new variety. But what has changed with UPOV 91 is now the scope of these breeders' rights, which are much broader. Because now you have the monopole in a way to prohibit all multiplication. So what has now changed with UPOV 91 is the scope of breeders' rights, which is much broader. Mm-hmm. You see, on the UPOV 78, I had in a way a monopole on the multiplication to produce seeds for the commercial market. Mm-hmm. But now I have a monopole on all multiplications, also the one in farmer fields, also on the one on farm-safe seeds, even if this propagation material is not intended to enter into the commercial market. So what changed is really that, I would say, in the 78 version, the impact on the farmer-managed seed system has been minimal because most farmers have no intention to sell the seeds on the commercial seed market. Maybe they like to sell some seeds on the local market, they exchange with their neighbors and so on. And this has not been impacted so far, but it is now. So this is the big change. And there has been a lot of other changes, like the length of protection, and there are more. And now, the African Model Law. So you see, the big difference of the African Model Law compared with UPOV is that the African Model Law had really the intention to balance farmers' rights and breeders' rights. And why there is this intention is because we need to be aware that both systems, the farmer-managed seed system and I would say that the formal system with breeding companies and breeders, both systems are innovation systems. Mm. You see, we know that the farmer managed seed system have produced an extreme, tremendous amount of agrobiodiversity in the last 100, 200, 300 years.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
And this diversity today is used by the seed industry.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it's clear also farmers, also breeders today, organic breeders, other breeders, are producing new varieties. And the error in the past was that all seed laws, all plant variety protection laws, only had in mind to promote the formal seed system, with some negative effect on the farmer-managed seed system. So you have promoted one innovation system at the detriment of the other one. And the African model laws say this is wrong. We need to support also the farmer innovation system. And therefore, they give farmers' rights as well as breeders' rights. And they are very clear that the breeder's rights should not have any negative impact on the farmers' rights to save, sell, exchange seeds.
Let's discuss this with a practical example. For example, you know TEF, the Ethiopian grain, small grain, where injera comes from. We have I don't know what how many varieties do we have, but in the laboratory, the gene bank, we have more than 6,000 accesses, you know. So let's say there are 50 varieties. Let's say a company comes from outside, and now there is this US company and university who have said that they have developed a different kind of F. Yeah? At F, which does not water lodge. You know water lodging? When water stays on the farm, then the crops would go down. Now they say that they have produced a short one, strong one, then water lodging will not affect. Now this is a new variety. They are coming with this variety now. And let's say Ethiopia is a member of UPOV 91.
No,
what will
not
happen to farmers' variety?
Yeah.
What will happen to farmers' variety of TEF and other varieties as the result of the entrance of this new company with this variety?
Okay, so important so far, Ethiopia is not a member of UPOV 91. There are still
let's say it's an assumption.
Yeah, yeah.
An assumption.
And
yeah.
So now, if it would have been a member of 91, this new company would have had the possibility to apply for a plant breeder's rights on this new TEF variety, and they will probably have received it if it's in line with the requirements of UPOV 91. So if it's distinct, uniform, stable.
Yeah.
And here is maybe the first injustice. You see, this new company is able to protect the new variety against concurrence from other seed industry. They could prohibit farmers to exchange the seeds, to sell the seeds, and so on and so on. But the farmer who has developed another TEF variety, but which normally as a farmer variety is maybe not homogeneous, he has no possibility to protect it. So his variety is used totally freely by the other company, maybe even accessed through a standard material transfer agreement of the FAO plants treaty, where normally, in most cases, the breeders don't have to pay anything. And he has free access, but at the end, he restricts access for farms.
Yeah.
So this is the big injustice.
Yeah.
It's important to say that this whole system, it's what I said before, has been drafted for the commercial seed market and not for farmer varieties.
Yeah.
And therefore, we have today this injustice.
Yeah. Okay. You know, you've tracked and contributed to several impact assessments of PVP laws around the world, right? What do they tell us about the real impacts of these laws on smallholder farmers?
So I think it's important to see that this farmer-managed seed system, they are really based on the free flow of their varieties, of the farmer varieties, into the farming community. So there is a need that they are free to have farm-safe seeds, to exchange it with their neighbors, to sell it on the local market, and so on and so on. Mm-hmm. And the big impact of these laws are that all these new varieties protected under UPOV here, the farmers could not integrate these varieties into the system, because if you are not allowed to produce farm-safe seeds, if you are not allowed to exchange it with your neighbor or to sell it on the local market, this will never be adapted into the system. So the biggest impact is really that all these varieties are in a way restricted for farmer use. They don't have any free access to these varieties. Now, probably some farmers continue to do what they have done since centuries, to use these varieties, but it's clear it is now illegal. Something is illegal, what has been really the center of the seed system for centuries. We have very few court cases in Africa against small farmers, because often maybe a big seed company says, why should I bring him to jail, to prison? He has no money to pay me anyway. There are much more court cases where farmers go to prison in Europe. And this is maybe also the future for Africa. So these laws will be enforced finally. Although maybe now we have few cases, maybe other farmers are already aligning themselves with these new rules and they are restricting themselves to go on with the practices they have done for the last centuries.
One major concern is the concentration of power in the seed sector. How do post-style laws affect market concentration and corporate control?
So first of all, we have to see today about 80% of seeds in Africa are still produced by the farmer-managed seed system. And I think what laws like UPOV 91 really like to change is to give more market, more power to the breeding companies, by not allowing farmers to freely save seeds and so on and so on. They will expand their market at the cost of the farmer-managed seed system. So these laws are really here to strengthen one system against the other one. But when we speak about market concentration, so that there are not between these two systems, but also within the formal system, we also need to speak about patents. You see, patents are a different kind of intellectual property rights. And I would say, regarding market concentration, they are probably even worse than plant variety protection, because in plant variety protection, at least a breeder has the freedom to use a protected variety for further breeding. This is not the case with patent. If I have a patent on a plant, maybe resistant to a certain disease, another breeder is not free to use my resistance and to integrate it into another plant and to sell it on the market. This is prohibited. So there are also intellectual property rights like patents, which really contribute to the further concentration of the seed market. And we need to tackle all of them.
What surprises me is, you know, we live in a world where there's a lot of unpredictability, and the climate crisis brings a lot of unpredictability, pandemics, the crash of biodiversity, so many things, and when you are faced with unpredictability, you have to build resilience into your system. But this whole idea of new, distinct, uniform, stable is actually creating monoculture. There is no diversity in there. Would you say something about that?
I think it's totally true what you are saying. This idea of especially homogeneous is against the idea of diversity.
Yeah.
And even in Europe, for example, we have seen that a lot of organic breeders, but still breeders from the formal sector, had problems to apply, not necessarily for plant variety protection, but to register the new varieties, because they have not been in line with this DUS, the distinct uniform stable requirements for the registration of new plant varieties. And therefore in Europe, we are now changing the rules, at least for organic breeder, and have different standards on homogeneity. And also in Europe, because we see that there is a real need, we allow also for the marketing, for the registration of heterogeneous populations. So it's true, we need this diversity. And as long, not only the plant variety protection, but also the registration of seed varieties are following this UPOV rules, this will have a tremendous negative impact on diversity in our fields.
Yeah. Can you give examples maybe from countries in Africa or elsewhere where the adoption of UPOV 1991 has harmed seed access, seed diversity, or local innovation?
Yeah, easily said, in every country where UPOV 91 is implemented, this free access for farmers to adapt these varieties to the circumstances is blocked. It's not possible anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Also because I said earlier that there is a kind of breeder's exception. So a breeder is free to use a protected variety. But we need to see the way farmers are breeding is often what is called mass selection. So they select the best varieties in the fields to be multiplicated, farm saved for the next generation, and so on. But this kind of breeding by selection, there is no farmer's exception for these. So you are not allowed as a farmer to do this kind of breeding. So the innovation by farmers is again not allowed for varieties protected under UPOV.
So do you have an example
for formal breeders? Sorry?
Any example of any country, either from Europe, Asia or Africa?
No, but as I said, in every country where we have this law, there is this negative impact. It's blocked, it's closed, it's
everywhere.
The end. It's everywhere, where UPOV 91 has been implemented, these rights are gone. And the promotion and I would say the strength of the farmer-managed seed system and the innovation of this system is blocked. And we have other examples, like in India, like in Thailand, but like in Ethiopia, where it is still possible and it goes on. In India, we have seen that there are, thousands of farmer varieties registered under the Plant Variety Protection Farmers' Rights Act. So there is a source of new varieties, of innovation, of diversity, which is not happening in other countries where this is not possible.
We can easily say that then, since this is largely adapted in Europe, it has affected actually the European diversity in seeds.
That's true. I think it's clear, and I see this in my country. I'm also working for a seed saver organization in Switzerland, where we collect a lot of old farmer varieties, which have been maybe produced 100 years ago or 50 years ago. But today, with a much stronger Plant Variety Protection Act, this innovation by farmers is ending. There are rarely new farmer varieties developed. for example, in Switzerland. And that's something we should not allow, because we need this diversity for the future, for all of us.
Yeah, that's really important. What trend are you seeing now in the promotion of PVP laws across Africa today? Who is pushing these legal reforms?
So we see there is a lot of pressure from the countries with a strong seed industry.
Mm-hmm.
It's evident. You see, the Netherlands, France, United States, Japan, these are the main countries pushing developing countries to adopt UPOV 91. And it's clear. The reason is not because they like to be nice, they like to support food security. The reason is business. They like to protect the business of their seed industry, and therefore they like to prohibit farmers to save, use, exchange, and sell protected seeds. That's the only reason.
And
definitely. This is done by several ways. So, for example, by free trade agreements. Just now, the European Union is negotiating a free trade agreement with Zimbabwe, Madagascar, and a few other countries. And part of this free trade agreement is that these countries need to implement UPOV 91. And this has been the case with Morocco, with Egypt. So this is certainly one way to force these countries to adopt UPOV 91. Other ways are just, I would say, donors. You see, Netherlands, for example, says to Nigeria, we help you to develop a strong seed sector. And they do this in a way as a developing project to support, to help these countries. But part of this package is always, we will tell you which kind of seed laws, of IP laws you will need. And they promote UPOV 91 in these countries. They say, we will help you, but only if you protect the interest of our seed industry. And we see that their impact is not beneficial for these countries. Another way is what we have seen in Zambia. Zambia had a project with the World Bank. And the World Bank gave some money to develop the agricultural system. Part of the package is you need to accede to UPOV 91. So you see there are thousands of different ways. And I would say also the UPOV Secretariat themselves, they are promoting with a lot, I would say, of misleading information. They are really pushing other countries into UPOV 91.
Thank you very much. In ORP and Aripo countries, you know, how much room do governments really have to protect farmers' rights under these PVP systems? You've answered it in some ways,
But so it's important to know for the audience that ORP, so the Francophone Africa, has a regional PVP system in line with UPOV 91 since over 15 years now. Important to see, first of all, when it was implemented, the African countries were told this will be a push to develop the seed industry in your country because this IP law is the basis. 15 years later, we see there has been zero investment in the private breeding sector in these countries. So what has been said is just not true. You see, after 15 years, less than 20 varieties are protected in these 17 African countries. That's nothing. Zambia, for example, which has a law which allows for much more farmers' rights, have much more protected varieties than the whole Francophone Africa. So it's just not true. But your question was, what are the possibilities for ORP countries to protect farmers' rights? And I have to say, as this is in a way a fixed agreement, they have no possibilities. So ORP is already in line. It covers all ORP countries. You could apply for one plant breeder's rights covering all countries, and the rules are fixed. It's totally different with Aripo. Aripo has also developed a kind of plant variety protection system under the so-called Arusha Protocol.
Mm-hmm.
But in contrast to OAPI, as a country, you need to ratify specifically the Arusha Protocol, that this protocol covers also your country. So that if I apply for a plant variety protection under the Arusha Protocol, this protection will be valid in my country. That this happens, I have to ratify the protocol. So far, only four countries. It was Ghana, Cabo Verde, Sao Tome and Principe, and Rwanda has signed the Arusha Protocol. So they give away, in a way, the flexibility to implement the PVP law, which is balanced. So for the ARIPO countries, I would say that the first demand, the first request is, do not sign this Arusha Protocol. Develop a law, for example, as it has been done by Uganda and others, which better balances farmers' rights and breeders' rights, which is really in line with the needs of your country. Because the Arusha Protocol, as we see today, is for 99% a copy-paste of Europe of 91. It has never been developed for Africa. So why should an African country ratify this protocol? Develop your own law which fits to your circumstances and to your need.
Yeah, based on Africa made the law, hopefully.
For example.
Donors and traders partner, I mean trade partners often claim that strong IP laws attract innovation. Encourages productivity, food security. In your view, is there solid evidence that UPOV 91 has led to meaningful agricultural innovation or development in Africa or elsewhere?
So that's what I'm saying, is in OAPI countries, we have seen that there was zero innovation, even 15 years after the amendment. And the reason is clear, because this system has not been developed for these countries. It has been developed for European countries. Yeah. So if you like to promote innovation in plant breeding for Africa, you could not take into account the farmer managed seed system. You need to think, how could we support also farmers to have innovation? And to do so, and this is also part of the FAO Plant Treaty, to protect innovation by farmers, you need to protect the rights of farmers. And so the solution for Africa would certainly be to develop an innovation system which says farmer innovation also in the future will play a crucial role. And our IP needs to take this into account. This does not mean there is no protection at all for the formal seed system, but it would be stupid to left out the main contributors of the current seed system of Africa. It's just stupid.
Yeah, I mean, the question is, you know, I think it's very clear from what you're saying that African Model Law offers much more than UPOV 1991. Question is, why didn't it get traction in policy environments? Why is it ignored, the new wrong view?
Yeah, so one reason is certainly the pressure. So if Morocco, for example, they had a free trade agreement with EFTA, so with Switzerland, Norway, Liechtenstein, Iceland. And you see, when Switzerland say, hey, we will reduce the taxes for the import of the tomatoes coming from Morocco, they have an interest to export vegetables to Europe.
Mm.
And then at the same time, Switzerland saying, but to reduce the taxes, you will have to prohibit your farmers to save seeds. Then they say, okay, and maybe they have not listened to their own farmers. What we have seen often is really, for example, when the Arusha Protocol has been developed, they have been in touch with the seed industry. They have been in touch with the US Patent and Trademark Office. They have been in touch with the European PVP Office. But they have never been in touch with their own farmers when they have developed the Arusha protocol.
Yeah.
So I think that the main problem is really that they listen too much to the ones who like to protect their own industry, and they listen not enough to the farmers who are responsible for the innovation today. So I think that's really the starting point to listen, to consult your own people, your own farmers. And when this is done, it's clear any PVP will not end as a copy-paste of EUPOF 91. It will be balanced. It will take farmers' rights into... It will integrate it into the new law.
Thank you very much. We're wrapping up, but I have two, three questions. Can you share any successful examples where civil society has pushed back EUPOF 91 influenced national or regional seed policies?
You see, there are many examples. Just, I would say, one big example is Latin America.
Mm-hmm.
With the exception of, I think, Panama and Peru, all Latin American countries, so Chile, Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, Ecuador, Central America, they are all members of EUPOF 78. Because farmer organizations, civil society organizations made clear, you should not restrict the farmers' rights we have now in place just because you like to accede to EUPOF 91. Mm. So here, EUPOF 91 has never been successful. And today I'm asking myself, why a country like, I don't know, Madagascar should have a stronger law than Brazil? Brazil is protecting in a certain way the farmers and their rights. Why should Madagascar not allowed to do the same like Latin American countries? And there is a very interesting case in Honduras where even NGOs have brought this for the Constitutional Court, the new law which has been in line with EUPOF 91. And the court, the Supreme Court, said, hey, this law in line with EUPOF 91 is against our constitution because it neglects farmers' rights. And Honduras is bound by other international agreements to implement these rights. So these are very important successes. But India, for example, is another example. When the Indian law has been developed, NGOs, farmer organizations have been very active, and they finally achieved that there is not something like a PVP law in place in India, but it's called the Plant Variety Protection and Farmers Rights Act. This has been the result of a lot of work by NGOs and farm organizations, and there are many, many others. So there are good examples to follow, and I think also this should be done by NGOs, farm organizations in Africa.
How can community-based system and indigenous knowledge be better protected and integrated into legal frameworks, you know?
So I think we need to be clear. Mm-hmm. To really support the farmer-managed seed system, this is a much broader issue than only intellectual property rights on seeds. This is also about land, about GMO, about many, many other things.
So maybe
you need a core law supporting the farmer-managed seed system, or you have to act in many, many, many other laws to make sure that the farmer-managed seed system is not negatively impacted. And that's what we are doing when we discuss plant variety protection law. The first thing is to do here that the protection of breeders' rights has no negative impact on the farmer-managed seed system by prohibiting the safe use, exchange, or sale of seeds. But this is just a part, and we will need much more to really have a supportive legal system supporting the farmer managed seed system.
But, thank you. Please finish.
Yeah, but I think it's we need to see what has been done for the breeders and the development of breeders' rights. You see, these have been developed to support the breeders. Mm. And we have the history now, since 100 years, these kind of IP laws have been done to support the work by breeders. And we need to do exactly the same for the farmers. We need to develop a legal system supporting the work done by the farmers. And all the legal parts related to seeds will be a very important component to this.
Excellent, Francois. Thank you. What would you say to African policymakers being encouraged to adapt UPOV 91 as a condition of trade investment deals?
So what we have observed in the past, I would say especially in Asia, if the country which is maybe negotiating with the European Union, with the US or with Japan, if they stay firm, if they have a clear vision that they like to protect farmers' rights, that they are not accepting UPOV 91, often the other side, Europe or EFTA and so on, they will say, okay, because they are also interested in a free trade agreement for other reasons. And often PVP is not the main reason to have this free trade agreement.
Exactly,
but
yeah.
The first thing is really to stay firm, to be clear. What we often hear sometimes, and it's terrible, that maybe some governments, and it's not restricted to Africa, this is also valid for other governments, they are maybe quite happy to have this in a free trade agreement, because afterwards they could go to the parliament and see, you see, we have no choice, we have to adapt. So often the government themselves are not really pushing the interest for their own farmers. So the first point is stay firm, be clear, and if you are really convinced that you will not adopt UPOV 91, and you could tell this to your free trade agreement partner that it is better for all if also the farmer managed seed system is promoted, then they will not urge you to do so. Because the main problem with free trade agreement is the following. The rights to participate are broken when free trade agreements are negotiated. You see, there has never ever been a farmer organization part of the negotiations of a free trade
agreement. Never, never.
This is always between the governments. Yeah. And only when the whole free trade agreement is finalized, they go to parliament, and the parliament has only the possibility to say yes or no. But
mostly yes.
The better process would be to develop a plant variety protection law, which is based on a very broad consultation, which is based on an analysis of your circumstances, of your agricultural system, of your needs, of the role of the farmer managed seed system. This is the basis to develop a law. And this rule is broken when you have a free trade agreement in a way implementing UPOV 91. There is no analysis of your circumstances. There is no analysis of your needs. They just tell you copy paste UPOV 91. And this is a very bad process to develop a law.
Thank you very much. Finally, you've done a lot of impact assessment, as you've said. How can African civil society best use impact assessments and legal analysis to resist harmful seed laws and promote food sovereignty? And also, what gives you hope in this struggle?
So I think they should use this scientific papers, and there are a lot of them, showing that UPOV 91 is not the way to develop laws which are in line with the needs of African countries. There are a lot of signs. There are a lot of impact assessments showing we need a PVP law which also protects the farmer managed seed system. So I would just like to say, be science-based, because the other ones who promote UP of 91, they are not science-based. No, that's true. They tell you it's good, but it's so stupid. How could a law developed by few European countries 35 years ago be the law for the future of the African agriculture? It's nonsense.
It's insane, not possible.
So, therefore, there are a lot of impact assessments. There are a lot of scientifically reviewed, peer-reviewed papers which are showing that this is not the way to go. You see, the idea, one size fits all. There should be one PVP law for the whole world. It's nonsense from the beginning. And this has been said by the United Nations Development Agency program, by the UN Secretary General, by many, many, many others. So follow science, because the enemies do not follow science. They follow ideology and the commercial interest. And what gives me hope is really my belief that we are right. You see, it's so obvious. It's so obvious that the law, which is the right law, maybe, for the Netherlands, is probably not the right law for Uganda or Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
Because in Africa, the farmer managed seed system is really giving access to an amount of seeds which is crucial for food security in Africa. As I said, 80% of seeds are produced by the farmer managed seed system. It's evident you need a different law than a country like the Netherlands. And because the evidence is so clear, this is also my hope. And I think our task is to speak to people with this podcast to make clear that you have the freedom and you have the possibility to develop a law which is supporting your agricultural system, which is supporting diversity of food and food security. And you should think about these goals, and you should not just support the interest of European breeders.
Excellent. If people want to get materials of AfriBase, where should they go?
So we have a website, as many other organizations, www.aprebest, so it's aprebes.org. Please go there. We have whole sections about research, also research done by other universities and so on and so on. Also our own studies. There is free access to all of them on our website. We also have a newsletter, which is maybe produced 5-6 times a year, where we always report about new developments, also about new studies, about new struggles in this area between farmers' rights and breeders' rights. Please.
Thank you so much, Francois. It was a fantastic conversation that I had with you. Plenty of knowledge. I'm sure we have scratched the surface. You know, there's so much that we can talk. But thank you very much. I hope you would come back again. I know we need you to have another round of discussion. Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for the invitation. It was a pleasure.
Yeah.